Oh my goodness. Hello, hello. It's me, Jordan. Welcome back to Let's Dig Into That, where JT and I flex our curiosity on graciously unsuspecting professionals in pursuit of growth and lasting change. Today we are honored, thrilled, straight up delighted to be joined by the incredibly talented, emotionally generous Alyssa Scarano. Alyssa is a licensed professional counselor and founder and owner of The Collective Therapy and Wellness. Known for her empathetic and compassionate approach, Alyssa views her work as a profound privilege, an opportunity to be invited into the most intimate and vulnerable parts of her clients' lives to offer unwavering support and grace. Hubba hubba. Specializing in relationships, Alyssa is dedicated to helping individuals heal from childhood trauma, break generational patterns, and cultivate meaningful, authentic connections by first fostering a compassionate relationship with themselves. That's right, we're starting on the inside, and we're kicking this conversation off right now.
Alyssa, thank you so much for being here. We are so excited to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, JT. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. I have to know, you're so passionate from everything I've read and we've listened to you on other podcasts. How did you get into this line of work?
Yeah, there's a short answer and a long answer. And, it really, I think, begins with, obviously, I think everything always begins with him, but it begins with my own journey of self-discovery. I remember, graduating from high school and saying, like, I have no idea what I want to do, but everybody's always told me, like, get into art, like, do something with art. And, at 18, I was like, okay, art, well, I like clothes, so maybe fashion design, cool. And I got in and it was easy. So I was like, this is it. This is my path. And I got there and I was like, this just doesn't feel right. Like it felt a little empty in a way. It just didn't really feel very meaningful. And there were things I learned about the industry that just didn't align with me. And so I dropped out against everybody's, best wishes and came home and I knew it was the right decision. And I said, well, community college, worked my way through financially. And during that journey, I just kind of followed what I liked and what interested me. And so part of it was finding my own voice and learning about just the different narratives that we all develop. And, really the meaning and the impact behind the words that we choose to tell our stories. And so it really began with an English lit degree, which then turned into a writing concentration and a minor in psychology. And it, it was a little bit of a winding path figuring out, am I going to, do the art therapy thing? Because that was always, a passion of mine was art. And, somewhere along the line, I just kind of decided, no, I can always incorporate the art. I'd rather, really deepen my understanding of psychology and, human development. And from there, I decided, and I want to help people sooner rather than later. Let me go the master's route. Let me go that route. And, I really confirmed that this is what I want to do. And, when you're in school, I've always been, again, like follow what feels right, what you enjoy and what lights you up. And one of the classes that I hated, I was like, I am not going to do this. I'm not going to do this when I graduate. I know that's a hard limit for me, was family counseling. And I was like, nope, never going to do it. Hate it. I don't, it's too much work. It's a lot of chaos in the room. There's so much anger usually. And so I graduated and the first job I got in the field was family counseling.
Of course.
Wow.
And I'm so glad that it was. As hard as it was, because I worked with families that were referred to Child Protective Services. And so my role was to work with the family to reunite them and keep them together. And I really learned how our stories come from how people have spoken to us, our caregivers, our attachment figures, our role models, or the authority figures in our lives, really does develop our own view of ourselves. And from there, how we relate to other people. witnessing the
Wow.
way our caregivers treat each other. And we take those stories with us and develop our understanding of ourselves from there. And we kind of learn to play these roles, whether it's a protector or a fixer, or even sometimes the victim, right? And that carries through because those roles are the things that they give us a place within our family dynamic. They give us importance, and they are the things that help us survive some of our harder times when we're kids. And so it can be hard to break that. And so that was really, I think, the
Wow.
most defining moment of figuring out what I wanted to do. And as time has gone on, I don't work with families specifically anymore because my practice is virtual, but we're always working with the family of origin stuff. So whether you're seeking therapy for couples counseling, or you're raising a family of your own and now you're the parent, or you're just really coming here because I want to work on myself, we're always working with that family of origin. And so it's a big part of working with my clients is, where did all of this begin? Tell me your story. And
Wow.
I want to hear where you're at. And so
Wow. So you touched on something that's near and dear to my heart, which is sort of this generational passed down effect of how we develop our identities. And I was actually having a conversation with my mom yesterday. And in my family, we have a lot of food issues. And she was telling me about being in therapy before she had kids. And she said, I don't want to pass this down to my kids. How do you break those patterns? What are some strategies that people can actually like? Those are so deep rooted, and I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, JT, I mean, it's so true. And it's not even, yeah, it's food, it's money, right? Like, you grew up with, maybe your parents didn't really have it. So that becomes a belief about money, right? That I'm not going to have it, or I have to work really hard to get it. And so it shows up, all of those stories and narratives show up in like every facet of how we operate as we get older. So how we break it is, I believe, and I say that it's a matter of, A, first, self-awareness, right? And recognizing that these narratives are the things that have carried us through our lives. So in a way, there's a respect that we can have for them, but also create some separation from them. That even though it's been the story, it doesn't have to continue to be the story. I am the designer of my life. I get to say what I allow and what I don't allow for my life. Does that answer
Wow.
the question fully?
It does, yeah. It makes me think of so many other things. Jordan and I and our listeners know we are sort of self-identified people pleasers. I spent a lot of my youth molding and shape-shifting to what I thought other people wanted me to be, and it certainly didn't serve me. And I guess my question for you is, how do we break these patterns? How do we stop being so influenced by the outside world?
Yes, and I even feel the people pleasing compounded with being a female, that like trying to get in that realm of, kind of touching on the self-love, self-identification, that awareness you're speaking to, that I'm set up for failure. Like, I have to appease the masses and make sure all is blissful before I can truly come back and t come to myself whole.
And I think it's a matter of, like, that story has been reinforced over and over and over. There's something that we get out of these stories, out of these roles of being the good girl, of being, the strong boy. There's something that we get out of that. Otherwise, it wouldn't have stuck, and it wouldn't have really gotten you through. And it has, right? Like, maybe in order to survive your family dynamic, and maybe that's a strong word, but make it through or grow within it, I had to be the good little girl, right? I had to, perform and shape shift in order to receive love. And so it's looking at, what was I getting out of it? And maybe, am I still getting something out of it? Or do I feel like I'm, sacrificing or self-abandoning? And what is another way that I can give myself love and give myself kindness and compassion? I don't have to change who I am, right? So it's really working on those, that maybe inner child that really wanted and needed love, as we all do, but finding another way that is in more of an alignment with our values, with what we want our life to look like.
Wow.
And I feel like, are we replacing these figures with a new, because I think I'm struggling still, just this is my journey with the like self, I don't, know necessarily what that might look like, because it's like sacrificial lamb vibe. And so I feel there's just this pace. How do I, the instant gratification of I've done good, like I am measuring with that people pleasing my participation in the world, my productivity, my value by all of these outside validations. And I'm not, I think my two-part question, how do I slow down, Alyssa? Like I have no idea what I think there's a need in there, but I can't, yeah, slow down enough to hear it. And I feel like it's counterintuitive to the pace that I'm being reinforced on. You're doing good. You're out there looking cute and achieving. And so, yeah, help me with that disconnect if you could, please.
Yeah. So how do I slow down and do it? Is that
Yeah,
what
that'd
you're
help.
saying? And it's tricky, right? Because we are living in such a fast-paced world. And the truth is that every facet of our lives is asking us to survive, right? And there are so many what we can call them maybe risk factors, right? Or so many threats to our survival, whether it's financial stability or, making sure that I'm pleasing my boss or that I'm keeping my family afloat, which nowadays is really tricky with all of the life stressors and world stressors that we're navigating. So it's, it makes sense if you're like, I don't know how to break the habit, right? Of, moving so fast and over functioning in order to keep, surviving. And truthfully, it's a matter of recognizing that I think the speed at which you are maybe moving through life is driven by a sense of urgency. I need to do it now, which is a reaction to a stress. It's a stress response, but really what it is fear, right? I need to do this now. And so really dealing with that fear, well, what happens if I do slow down, right? That so in
I
that sense,
lose control. That feeling, this pretend imaginary, is my guess that I'm like, oh, this makes me feel that I've got a handle on it.
exactly, right? And we all want control. And the truth is like, and I mean, I know I'm guilty of it too, is like we never have control, but we think that we do through all of these like false, kind of like false representations of like, I have control over this or that or this. But anything, unfortunately, right, can happen at any given moment. We only have control over the way we view things, the way we react to things, and the way that we take it in or the meaning that we attach to our day-to-day lives. So it's remembering that, like, what do I actually have control over? And so when you look at that fear that's driving the behavior, it's showing you that, okay, Jordan, you have an unmet need. That fear is telling you there's something that you need right now that you're not getting. And maybe it's comfort, maybe it's reassurance, maybe it's security. Okay, how can I give that to myself? How can I create a sense of safety, security, or reassurance? Is it going to my partner and being like, I don't know if I would trust you when you say this, but I need you to tell me out loud that it's going to be okay. Like,
Yep, that happens
or
here.
I just need a hug, or, I need you to be in this like really scary moment with me, and look under the bed and confront the scary monster that I think is there, and to know that I'm not alone. So like that is where the real control comes from, is like if I sit, slow down and or just acknowledge like I'm feeling something which is causing this behavior, and what is it trying to tell me about what I need that I'm not getting or I don't have.
Wow. So that makes me think about our dynamic
Yeah.
in our
Yes.
relationship. And something that I struggle with is I will get so caught up in Jordan's needs and I won't take care of my own. Are there steps to sort of reground myself and think about what I need when I can get way too focused on what she needs?
And in my defense, wanting very little of this attention. I got this. Don't you worry about it. But no, I think that's, yeah, well summarized. That's our dynamic.
And I think that's something that we often see in family dynamics or in partnerships is like it's really hard to witness those we love in any sort of distress. Like I just want to come in and like make it better, right? Like I'm sure, and this happens, I think, for a lot of us, is like we see someone crying and we immediately like jump up, go to the closet, get the box of tissues, like it's okay, I'm here. But in that sense, it's like I just want to see you okay and happy and healthy. And so it there's so much love driven by that wanting to jump in, but it comes from like this feeling is too that I'm experiencing, hearing you or witnessing you in pain is really uncomfortable for me. It's making me feel like I don't have any control or I'm overwhelmed and that I should be. For a lot of men, sometimes it's a matter of like, I'm supposed to be the one to protect you from this, right?
Fixer,
And
right.
so, yeah. And it look, I mean, even as a parent myself, like there, I if I could bubble wrap my child he's out to the
Yes.
world, I would. But we have to remember that sometimes, like pain and overwhelm is. When we allow somebody to feel it, we're empowering them to work through it and move through it and, having them gain the skills that they need in order to overcome it or to for it to not prevent them from moving forward. So like an example of that is say that you're watching a niece or a nephew or a child. And they fall, right? They're learning to walk and they fall. Like our immediate is like, I don't want you to fall. Like we'll do all these things to prevent the falling. But in reality, a child needs to learn how to fall because then they know, like, I've got to put my arms out to catch myself, right? And so that's kind of like the same thing. We can be there with our loved ones in their time of distress or pain and a simple, sometimes a hand on the back and comfort and sitting next to you and not turning away in that moment can be reassuring. But another thing is like, what can I do to support you? And whatever answer they give you, like, I just need you to listen. All right, I can do that. Then I am kind of secretly like helping, or if it's like, I need solutions. Okay, well, let's figure out together maybe some options. It's not all on you to fix it.
Wow. That's very good.
Yes.
I know. And I feel like I'm curious in a relationship dynamic and perhaps some habits that come from previous relationship, past relationship experience, that sometimes I find JT might be tending to my needs by as a deferring tactic of taking care of the fear of whatever he has to deal with on his own agenda. What advice would you give for that when it's like, okay, yeah, because I think that like that self-awareness and taking it back where it's like, let's tackle that low-hanging fruit together as a couple, and then we'll get to the bigger stuff. And the only child in me is like, go get that autonomy and get back to me around dinner time. And so, yeah, is that kind of a deferring tactic? Is that a common,
Yeah.
perhaps? Okay.
I would say, right, because that's
Wow.
where our focus is. It's
Direction.
even in the focusing on the to tasks and the to-do list and over functioning, right, is a way to also avoid our feelings that are causing us to be in constant motion. Yeah, so if our focus is on always on caring for somebody else and making sure they're happy. And that's a quest for control as well. Like this feeling that this is stirring up for me is so overwhelming. I just kind of like need it to go away.
Wow.
So yeah, it can be. But I
I think
think the
you
love behind it is accurate too. Yeah.
exactly comes from a place of love. But you've
Yeah.
said those exact, I need this feeling to just go away.
Yes, exactly. And I'm going to deflect a little bit right now, actually.
Thank you. That feels right. That feels right for
But
me.
I'm going to stick with relationships. One of the things that I really wanted to ask you is how much do we take from our previous relationships and bring them into our new ones? And are those patterns that are well established? And like, how do we break from these patterns of the relationships and what we've learned in past relationships when we're bringing them into new ones?
A really, really great question, and I'll tell you why, because there's so many layers to it, right? So I think the only way to do it is to like kind of go back to family of origin. And something a lot of my clients hear me say, or you might even hear me say on previous podcasts, is like everything begins within, right? This narrative about who I am and what I must do in the world in my relationships comes from my previous experiences in relationships. But that's not the end all be all, right? It's not. It's like the semicolon of the story that began in childhood, and right? Then we have these relationships as we get older with our friends, which is a natural part of development, and then our romantic relationships, which, some of them might not be too great or too healthy, or the truth is that I guess the way to kind of conceptualize it before we get into like the how is, anytime that there's a trauma, and let's talk about trauma in terms of like it doesn't have to be that I witnessed violence or I was violated or there was violence directed at me. It could be these little t traumas like that teach us or change our wiring or understanding of ourselves in the world that are sometimes repeated, right? Why it becomes something sticky for us is because there's this pre-existing vulnerability, right? So maybe it was a narrative from childhood about like who I am in the world. And then there's this like catalyst, right? So let's call that the relationship that wasn't so healthy. And then after that, we've got like the level of support that got us through that really tricky relationship or unhealthy dynamic. And if we don't have this support or like healing afterwards, we remain here. We remain stuck. Does that make sense? So, in terms of like, how do I break this pattern? It comes from, I think, really recognizing that I went through this thing, and it's still really preventing me from moving forward, right? What was this thing about? And we all, none of us like the discomfort of looking at this thing, which is why we're like, I need this feeling to go away, and or I need to end this relationship right now. So how is having all of our feelings, right? And connecting with ourselves rather than self-abandoning, rather than just working on like the instant gratification of escapism, of running away from this feeling. It is a matter of, yes, like turning inward and going back to that question of like, what am I feeling? And what is this emotion trying to communicate to me about what I need? Why does it like looking at that with curiosity? Rather than judgment.
Love curiosity.
Yes, the self-compassion and curiosity of that. No, that's amazing. And I think I'm like curious, can you do the work while you're in the new relationship going, whoopsie daisy? I could have taken a pause and thought about perhaps a tendency, a pattern I might be rolling through. That's my type. Or is that work? Yeah, once you're in it, can you make those changes? Because here we are, round two.
I mean, I think again, there's like no, I wish there was, right? Like this rule book for life that's like, okay, you're in this scenario. Here's what you have to do to get to this side of it,
Flip to
right?
page 74, the answer's right there.
Right? Like, and then it's funny because I always have my clients are like, I went through this thing. What do I do? Like, how do I just feel better? I'm like, and I kind of joke, I'm like, okay, well, spin on your head and lift your right foot and pat your belly and your head at the same time, the whole.
Good day.
And so I think it's shifting from this understanding that there's a finish line to all of this stuff. Like there isn't, and that's okay, right? So like if we look at ourselves as like an onion, right? We have the outer layer. And sure, we do all of this healing, but we move forward in life and maybe that outer layer peels back because we're living our lives and
Stuff
life
happens.
doesn't just go the way we always want it to go, and we're not in control of our partner. And so life is going to show us a new layer of healing. Is it great to take some time for yourself between relationships to reflect on like, what did I maybe avoid, or what was I not wanting to look at that time when I was in that relationship? Why didn't I want to look at this thing? And I was so in such a rush to just, achieve my relationship and being this perfect relationship, this happy relationship. I was in such a rush for the feelings of distress or discomfort to just go away. I think it's a matter of, yes, taking that time to reflect. But when you're in a relationship, the new one, there's always going to be learning and growth that happens. And things from our past sometimes get re-triggered. Or there's new layers of it. I'm like, wow, I didn't know that was there. I didn't know it was going to show up that way. So do we have to be like perfectly healed? No. I think as long as we're healing from whatever it is that happened that's acute at the time, then maybe, yeah, we're
Getting
ready to.
away from that avoidant and yeah, recognizing what those might have been.
You said a word that always pops into my mind and makes me want to ask about it, but you said triggered. And I'm curious, like if you know your partner has a particular trigger, how do you approach that from like an empathetic and compassionate standpoint and really help them without overstepping? Do you have some strategies for that?
And that's a great question for our people pleasers is like, I know this is a trigger and I don't want to accidentally trigger it, right? But I want to help you through it so that we can be in it together. So as far as like, how do we either, is it, how do we support our partners through it without taking on responsibility for it? I guess.
Exactly. That's a much better phrasing of my question.
So I love this analogy. I think I can answer this in an analogy. Say that, if you're listening to this, like you consider your relationship as like you're dancing with your partner, right? You're coming to the dance with you've danced a lot of dances before throughout your life. And maybe you've hurt yourself in one of those dances. You danced too long or your partner, stepped on your foot one too many times, right? So you're at that dance, but you're bringing everything with you to the new dance, right? That's like, maybe you've got your knee, it has arthritis, right? So you're gonna need a little bit of grace with that knee. And maybe you can tell your partner, like, look, this thing is a trigger or a vulnerability for me. It kind of like when it gets pressed on a little bit too much or I put too much weight on it, it's something that can affect the way I dance with you, right? So you're warning your partner that this is something that is a little sensitive for me. I need some extra help. Great, right? So now Jordan tells you this thing, JT, and you can be like, okay, so when I'm spinning her or I'm dropping her back, I need to be conscious of the fact that, like, yeah, that knee needs a little bit of extra support, Because we are always dancing with each other.
That's such a great analogy.
Feel
Like that'll stay with me.
grace.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think your word of the grace, that choice of word, and the gentleness about figuring it out. It depends on the tempo of the song
Yeah.
how much that knee's going to come into play. And so, see what I did there?
I like
I
that.
know
I
I
like
figured you
that. I
would.
like that a lot.
Yeah. And that's one of my favorite things about that analogy when considering like relationships or couples is there's so many facets, right? It's the floor you're dancing on. It's the music. Are you both in sync with each other, right? Have you eaten? Have you slept? Like those are all, things that are going to make us more sensitive to remembering what we need, honoring that, but then also remembering like, wait, my partner is also dancing with me right now. Like I forgot they were here. So, I think we do have to remember for ourselves about, which parts of us need extra love, care, and support, making sure that we're honoring that for ourselves. But out of kindness and compassion, we can extend that to, our partner. Hey, remember my knee? Or, oh my goodness, thank you for reminding me about that.
Yeah, there is a lot more unification where it seems even like JT wanting to be so kind and loving as to want to serve my needs is not a dance together. It seems a little more, yeah, maybe that's just for me, but a little more cold, a little more black and white.
Well, this has really been helpful for me to see how self-serving sometimes it is to be focused only on your needs and not my own. Like this connection with self is sort of blowing my mind a little bit.
Yes, exactly right. And you mentioned the escapism, and I think that's where I'm struggling with that connection with self and finding that awareness is it's so easy when I need a little tweak, a little, approval from some external source, limitless. So with all of these availabilities of people praising us from afar, everyone gets a trophy. Why are we all kind of lonely? Why is everyone kind of See, and I understand you are totally right. Survival mode is real. We are not in a, it feels like a luxury and indulgence to even talk, about this gentle time we can have with ourselves. But why are we not, why is that not, are we running a long-term risk of our self-worth being damaged by
Instant gratification.
the instant
Yeah.
gratification?
Yeah. I think part of it is the culture, right? I don't want to blame culture, but I do think that one piece of it is, as a society, we're used to now we can order something online and it's at our doorstep in a few hours, right? Or the next day. We can just put on the TV and any show that we want to watch is right at our fingertips, no longer having to go to the movies. I mean, everything right now is instant. And so all of those things are like, cool, like I have this solution to this problem. I ordered it and it's here in 4 hours, right? I don't even have to go food shopping. I can order food and it's gonna be at my house in 15 minutes. Like there's a lot of our lives now are very much like it's we can get it within a few minutes to a few hours, right? That gratification. And then we've also got the distraction of social media, like it, and it's everywhere. I think we all, to some degree, use social media, whether it's, platforms for video streaming or podcasts or music, or yeah, the Facebook and Instagram type of stuff. And even that, right? We're looking at pictures or we're distracted. I don't have to deal with how I'm feeling because I've got all these things right at my fingertips. And so, how do we break that, cycle of seeking instant gratification? And it comes, well, I think the thing is, what it points to is like, I don't want to feel the feeling and I want it to go away. But when you put the phone down, or you shut the TV off, or you close the laptop, that feeling is still there. Even if you fall asleep on your phone, just reel after reel after reel. Doom scrolling, I think they call it, right? You wake up and you're like, I still feel the same way. Or you don't even sleep as good, let's say that. So you can use one of the things I say is everything in life, our relationships, the things that we're confronted with on a daily basis, if we look at it instead of as something that's happening to us versus like, what is this showing me about myself? We can kind of see, like, oh wow, lately I've really been on my phone, or I've been in the search of like just needing these quick solutions. What is that about? Again, with curiosity instead of self-blame or judgment or comparison.
Separating that perspective, like you said, creating a bit of distance there to
Yeah.
reflect.
Yeah. What is this showing me about myself with curiosity? And maybe it's that I have a hard time lately with sitting in the silence of being alone because all these feelings are going to come up that like it's just going to pour out. And if it pours out, that means it's never going to stop. So it is a matter of, I think, like I said, being a little bit more curious with what's going on. What is this showing me about myself? And then what do I need, really need underneath this quest, right, of ordering something online or distracting myself? And a great way to even think of that is, and I can use a real life example.
Yes, please.
Okay, so real estate market is wild right now, right? So if you're looking for a home, looking to sell your home, looking to move, I am in it with you, trust me. Like, geez.
All the feels. I was a realtor and my heart goes out to you in this
Yeah,
moment.
it's rough, right? So what, I wound up getting a little wrapped up in myself was like, I want to buy a house. I need to buy a house. I've got to save for a house. I'm looking for a house, right? And I've got this whole story about how I can't buy a house because they're so expensive. And now I'm getting wrapped up in this. And then I'm looking online for like housing, right? I'm looking for like something, well, what can I afford? And that instant gratification of seeing something that's like, okay, it's in budget. It's giving me security of like, I'm gonna be get something, I'm gonna be
I'm in the
able
game.
to find something, I'm in the game, right? But in reality, sure, I'm wanting a house, but I'm not, what I'm really looking for is whatever the association that I have with being able to buy a house, right? So getting curious about it, I was like, okay, what does it mean to buy a house? What am I thinking that's going to get me? Well, I doing some reflection, I got to the bottom of it and I was like, well, if I had a house, I'd be more financially stable. That's what that would mean, apparently. I don't know. Mortgages are
Apparently, you know.
expensive. And if I was financially more stable, then I'd be able to breathe. And when I got there, I was like, wait a minute, I can breathe now. I'm just not breathing. Like, I can do that. So we're always looking for the feeling that we believe this other item is going to provide, right? So by being on our phones, like maybe it is that what I'm looking for is relief, right? From the exhaustion that I really feel. So what I should be doing maybe is taking a break and taking a nap or taking care of myself. I don't need to focus on that external item or finish line. I can give that and create that for myself at any given point.
Wow.
I love it.
I
Well,
get so caught up in that, the whole if this, then that concept. Like that is
yes.
whew.
And that home ownership, it's financial dependence, not stability, just depends. You're good. The breathing. And so you did a very good search there.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, this has been truly amazing. I always have to be the one who's watching the clock, and we are sort of running out of
Right.
time here. Do you have more
I
questions?
feel that I could just chat with Alyssa
I
all
know that
day.
you've been so amazing, but we always like to close on sort of a question that helps our listeners get to know you better outside of just what you do professionally. And so our question for you today is, what's your favorite time of the day?
Oh, my favorite time of the day. I've always been a night owl, always. I'm not a morning person at all. At all. It's just the way I've always been wired. I love, like, I feel like more productive at night. I think because there's just a little bit, there's less focus on what I have to do and more focus on, like, I've got all this space and the world is quiet and I'm not needed
Yes.
anywhere. So that's when I feel most creative and most productive. But then I think, yeah, there's something about the silence at the end of the day that I really enjoy. I'm doing the work that I do, there's always stimulation coming in through my ears, and I love having conversations and listening. But sometimes, at the end of the day, it's like I can really finally truly appreciate and notice the silence and how loud that is. And for me, that just feels so good. So I love nighttime. And then you get to go to sleep, which is always something I'm looking forward to.
Yes. As a mom, you're like, and into the rest mode. No, I think that's great and appreciate that gratitude in the moment, the silence. Yeah. Nobody needs me as the people pleasers. Ooh, I empathize. I love it. I love it. I think that's great. And just so folks know how to find you, would you mind telling us about the amazing work you do with the collective, your business? Thank you.
So with the Collective Therapy and Wellness, we're a multi-state virtual private practice. We provide therapy and wellness services, and we really try to make our care holistic. So with our practice, we offer wellness services, workshops. We are hiring a nutritionist. We have a mindfulness meditation teacher who's also a registered yoga teacher. We've got a lot of really great stuff to complement the therapy. So you've got, an opportunity to do the deeper healing work, and then you have opportunities to practice new skills with the support of somebody who's trained within their respective wellness field. And if you're a current client, you get all of those services for free as part of your treatment. And so, it's amazing to get to do this work. And so you can find us online at www.collective-therapy.com.
Awesome. That's amazing. I love because it is like the lifestyle therapy and the making it where it is, yeah, a one-stop shop for feeling good and feeling whole. I love it. You do
Absolutely.
incredible work. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this could go on forever because this is so amazing. I hope this didn't feel too much like a session for you for the for us as
Yes.
a
No,
I made him
no.
promise.
I was like, don't let me just.
I think our listeners will have so many wonderful takeaways. So thank you for your time. You're truly awesome. Thank you.
We
Thank you
appreciate
so
you.
much for having me, JT and Jordan.
If this podcast, or just JT, means something to you, it would mean the world to us if you had a second to share this episode or your favorite episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow on the homepage at letsdigintothat.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We adore you, love ninjas.
And we see you, rage pirates.
Thank you. Thank you.